Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefrey, and today's guest I met quite some time ago at a conference, and Mike Boyle was presenting. Very excited to see him present, but was even more impressed when Mike stayed behind for probably an hour or two after his presentation and answered tons of questions, took on and taught several teaching regressions to various exercises. And it really stuck in my mind at that moment how much of a teacher and a guy that wants to give back to our profession Mike is. And so I've always appreciated that about him through the years, read a lot of his material. He's written and produced several DVDs, books. He's a guy that's constantly giving back to our profession. And that's why I want to have him on the show. He has worked with the elite athletes at almost every level. He's NHL, Major League Baseball, NFL Combine Prep, and various high school and youth athletes through the years. And he's had tons of success, obviously, training them. He's a guy that appreciates the learning process. And that's one of the things that we talk about quite a bit in this episode, is the fact that, you know, you will die a slow death in this profession if you just rest on your laurels. You know, you've got to be constantly pushing the envelope. You've constantly got to be learning new techniques and challenging old concepts, because it's a young profession. And Mike's been in this game for a long time with tons of success, and every time you turn around, he's pushing to learn something new, and not only learn it for himself, but then turn around and share it with the rest of us. So I know you're going to be real excited, and you're going to get a ton out of this episode. Before we get started, I want to reach out to Big D with Play Sports Performance Flooring. As you know, Play is the sole sponsor for Iron Game Chalk Talk. And Big D is the guy that you see over in the booth lifting the Atlas stone, getting everybody excited, encouraging others to lift the stone sometimes they don't think that they can do. He's just got such a big and infectious personality. And he's been recently diagnosed with leukemia. And so I want to take a moment, if you can, please pause the episode, go to the Facebook page, find Big D's page, and please send him a little encouragement. As you know, this profession is challenging, and you know, all the encouragement that you can possibly get, especially in times of need, goes a long, long way. And I know for a fact that this guy cares about strength coaches and would be lifted up by any kind of words of encouragement that you could send his way. So please do that, and take care of our own, you know. So that's what it's all about. So sit back and enjoy this episode. All right, guys, very excited about having Mike Boyle. I've been trying to get Mike on the show for a while. It's just worked out to our schedules are able to match up this week. But, you know, Mike, you've been a guy that's had a tremendous influence on my career, whether or not you've known it or not. We met several years back. I talked your ear off at a clinic, and then, you know, I've read pretty much everything you've put out since then. And so without having ever really interacted much, you've had an impact on my career, and I appreciate that. And I appreciate you being on the show, man.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me. I love doing this stuff, so it's always a good opportunity to be able to teach and talk, so it's fun for me.
No doubt. No doubt. And Mike, you know, how did this all come about for you? You know, what led to you getting in the profession in the first place? And then, you know, what's kept you in it for as long as you've been?
Well, I can tell you the first thing that led me into it, my father was a coach. My father was a high school phys ed teacher, coached basketball, coached football, eventually became a high school principal. But I sort of grew up as a kid going to practice. I grew up really more with basketball because by the time I was sort of old enough to go with him, he was done with football and he was coaching basketball.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'd go to basketball practice and I'd hang around, and we'd go to the games and we'd sit on the bench and, you know, get water and towels, and we were just there. We were in it from the get-go. And then I was lucky enough to realize that at that time I thought I wanted to be a phys ed teacher or maybe an athletic trainer. I didn't really know what I wanted to do, but I went to Springfield College, which is a great school for any of those fields. And by that time, I had decided that probably athletic training was going to be the best fit for me, because strength and conditioning literally did not exist.
Sure.
I went to college, 1977, when I went to Springfield College, people were certainly lifting weights, but they were not strength and conditioning coaches. Boyd Apley was probably just getting established at Nebraska at that time. But for anybody that's read Outliers, I always say when you talk about the Outliers moments, the things that happen to you that you don't know at the time.
Right.
I walked into my dorm, I believe my freshman year, although I'm not 100% sure, and my dorm director was Mike Oyser.
Oh, wow.
First guy I meet when I walk in the door.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and here's a guy who obviously now, if for those who don't know who Mike Wojcik is, the non-historians in our group, yeah. Mike, more Super Bowl rings than anybody in the history of the National Football League.
Dallas Cowboys head strength coach.
And now the Dallas Cowboys head strength coach. He's got 6 Super Bowl rings and has probably been to 10 Super Bowls. The other guy who was at school at the same time was Rusty Jones. Rusty was coaching
Buffalo Bills.
There. And Rusty has more Super Bowl appearances than anybody but Mike.
How about that?
They were guys who were just starting to think. Mike was coaching track. He was a track thrower. That was his background. But he had every strength and health, every Ironman, every muscle and fitness, all in boxes in his room. He liked oldies music, 50s music, which I loved. He loved to have a beer, which I loved. And he loved talking about what was strength and conditioning. I think then we just called it lifting.
Right.
But that was what it was. But I think I kind of parked myself in his room for on and off for 2 years. I just sort of went there and talked to him and hung out with his throwers. My training partner was one of his throwers. Got into competitive powerlifting from training with his throwers. And so, as I said, you don't realize that you're literally right there at the moment that all this stuff is getting started. But sure. I was. I walked out and I went to Boston University as an athletic trainer because, again, there weren't strength and conditioning jobs out there, but I knew in the back of my mind that I wanted to be a strength coach. And after 6 months of athletic training at BU, I just set up shop in the weight room. I resigned my paid position, went in the weight room and kind of was a squatter in the literal sense that I just took over and I told the coaches, hey, I'm going to be here every day and I'll work with your teams. No money. No one had to pay me. I just went in and parked my ass in there and went to work. Made the basketball coach start again. Outliers. Rick Pitino was a basketball coach.
How about
next basketball coach was John Kuster, who ended up coaching the Pistons. The guy after Steve Clifford was after that, who's coaching the Charlotte Bobcats now, I think.
Wow.
I mean, and it's just a whole litany of these people that were there. And I talked to Tim Murphy, who's been a football coach at Harvard for a long time, went to Springfield with me, was the offensive line coach then at BU. I talked him into letting me run the program with a great sales pitch, which was, you guys can't be here every day, I can. You have to recruit, I don't. I'll be here. You know I can lift. You've seen me work out. You know I know what I'm doing.
Right.
And I'll be here every day. That was hard for them to turn down.
Wow.
And I just sat down and went to work and started running the program.
Well, it's such an important message because, you know, I know you've talked about this in articles that you've written. You know, coaches that come out nowadays, you know, it's that instant gratification, instant, you know, internet success or whatever. They want success immediately, you know, and it's those outlier moments. It's all that, all those points through time that add up, and it's the sacrifice, and it's the hard work, and it's the hours, and it's taking risk that all lead to a Mike Boyle becoming a Mike Boyle or, you know, any coach that's had success in this field. Having success. And so it's an important message that it just doesn't happen overnight.
No, and I was 40 years old before anybody knew who I was. Mm-hmm. And I had been in the field for almost 20 years. So I was 22 years old when I started at BU. I came out of college. I graduated at 21. I went to work at BU. I was 22. And I was 40 before anybody cared what I had to say. I think that was around the time I wrote Functional Training for Sports. I started speaking for Perform Better. But I was 18 years in.
Wow.
And if you look at it now, I'm 53. I'm 31 years into this thing.
No doubt.
And I went the first probably 8 years part-time, working, bartending at night, doing everything I could. But I tell everybody, I was living the dream. I was Division I strength coach. And it didn't, you know, I never, that's what I said, the instant gratification. I tell everybody, I'm not a great guy to work for now because I'm the guy who walked the school both ways uphill kind of guy. Don't tell me about the hours. I worked from 91 to 99. I worked at BU and for the Bruins at the same time. And basically had two almost full-time jobs. I would get up in the morning. So when we had winter workouts, I'd get up at 6, and sometimes I'd come home at 11. My wife would not see me days on end when football winter workouts were going on, because I'd go to the Bruins practice. I'd go to football winter workouts. I'd go to the Bruins practice. I'd leave the Bruins practice. I'd go back. I'd open up the weight room. I'd leave the weight room. I'd go back to the Bruins game, work with guys during the game, and then I'd work with guys after the game when they were done, and then I'd go home.
That's right.
And I did that for 10 years.
Wow. And
after I stopped bartending, before that I was working, same thing, every day at BU. I mean, I told people I dressed in my car in the tunnel. And I could put my car in park to put my clothes on to go bartend. And literally stripped down to my underwear in my car, you know, because the traffic's so bad.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, I got to change my pants. I got to get out of my shorts. I got to get a pair of black pants on so I can work behind the bar. And I'm literally in the car taking my pants off. So I have very little sympathy for these, and I have less sympathy for the internet experts. These guys are the 30-year-old authorities. And I say, if you look at their resume, mine look exactly the same.
Right.
You know, I've worked with guys from the NFL, the NBA, NHL, and on paper, somehow we've become equals or peers. Some days I want to throw up when I hear people.
Isn't that amazing?
Making their list of experts, and they've got these 30-year-old guys who never accomplished a thing in the field.
Right.
I heard one day with somebody, and I won't say who the other two were, but it was blank, blank, Vern Gambetta, Don Chu. And I was like, you just put these other two guys in the same sentence as two guys with 30-plus years of literally creating and changing the field.
Yeah, no doubt.
And, you know, two kids who were, you know, their most important job they've ever had was as somebody else's GA.
Yeah.
To get in the same breath as those guys. But that's the world we live in the internet world.
No doubt. I agree with you 100%. You know, one of my favorite articles that you've written is, what was it, the 25 mistakes you made in 25 years, you know, and you know, one of the main reasons I wanted to have you on the show is I wanted to get your opinion as somebody that's done it. You know, you're doing it currently with, you know, with the Boston Red Sox. You've done it with the Bruins. You've done it on the private sector. You know, what do you think the state of the union of strength and conditioning is right now as a field? And then where do you see it headed in the next 25 years?
In some ways, it's the best it's ever been.
Absolutely.
And I think that's really good. In other ways, it's the worst it's ever been. So I guess, you know, the book quote, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. And I think that's sort of where we are. It's the worst of times because we realize we've got a lot of phonies out there who have used the internet to create reputations that are undeserved, at least.
Sure.
And probably unfounded. That's bad. But in the reverse case, we have access to so much more information, so much more material. I think, like, I look at it, you know, college football has gone backwards in my mind in terms of the guys have gotten younger and the lifting's gotten worse. I think there was a time when the Al Millers and the Johnny Parkers and those guys were really influencing the field, that football training was getting better. Mm-hmm. I think we've slid back to the meathead phase of hire some 25-year-old guy who'll get after him. You know, that's the big thing here. I need a guy that'll get after the guys.
Right.
So that means someone who'll yell.
Yeah.
So if you hire a loud 25-year-old who looks like a strength coach, and then he just throws the guys in the room and does a Flintstone-era program of ugly squats and ugly cleans and bouncing bench presses and yells a lot and runs they flop, then you'll have a better team. And, you know, that's all in the name, I guess, of mental toughness. So I'm not a big fan of where the college football thing is going. Pro football has really advanced, I think. There are some really good guys there, and there are guys that are looking at, because suddenly they're going to get, in pro football, you're going to get fired if guys get hurt. Not if guys don't get strong. In college, you're going to get fired if you don't have enough guys benching 400 pounds.
Right.
And once they get to the pros, no one cares anymore. All they want is, hey, I want him to play on Sunday. So it's really funny how a game...
It's how you're evaluated,
can be so different. You've got the same game played by relatively the same people, but because with kids, when you get these incredibly gifted kids, I always say there's like 2-3 years.
Sure.
Lift boulders, and kids would get bigger and stronger because they're just genetic freaks, and they're going to get stronger as soon as they get on some kind of organized program.
Right.
And when they get to the pros, somebody's thinking, I need these guys healthy. I need my best players playing.
That's right. That's right.
And so, as I said, so I think there's, as with everything, there's two sides to it. Some things are really getting better. Some things are really getting worse. I think basketball has really gotten better. There's a lot more basketball strength coaches now in college basketball that are doing a really good job. Hockey is getting better. There's a lot of hockey strength and conditioning coaches that are really doing a good job. I really think, and it's sad to say, I think football is the one that's regressed the most in my mind. Some of the YouTube videos that you watch of test day are horrifying.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Any day, you look at the videos and you think, I'd be so embarrassed to have somebody watch my players lift the way some of these guys lift. But it's all in the interest of numbers.
You know, with that in mind, you know, strength and conditioning for football at the college setting, obviously, it's maybe advanced the most when it comes to being maybe paid appropriately or the focus on that area or whatever you want to say. From a structure standpoint, not where do you think that the field's headed in terms of? Do you think it's going to be more specialized where your staff's going to be a nutritionist, a corrective exercise specialist, a conditioning specialist, or do you think it's going to be more in the next 25 years, every sport at the college level is going to have their own strength coach? It's still going to be kind of a jack of all trades.
I think you'll see more because if you look at it now, more places have added a basketball strength coach. That's right. Become a big field that didn't exist 10 years ago.
Correct, yeah.
And more of the hockey schools are adding a hockey strength coach. And you're seeing that. So I think there'll be some degree of specialization, at least in the revenue sports. The football staffs are getting bigger.
Yeah.
So you see guys now who have 3, 4, 5 guys. Football, you said the money has gotten tremendously better in football. And guys are getting paid amounts of money that I would have been. If someone told me that guys are going to make $250,000 a year as strength and conditioning coaches, in college, I would have told them you were crazy. I said, that's never going to happen.
Right.
And it's happened.
Yep.
So the facilities have gotten crazy. I saw Texas A&M's new facility. They've got a video screen at every rack.
Yep.
They replay every rep. So the potential is there for it to be really good. And I think what will happen, the head coaches will get educated because that's really what drives it. And they'll realize that injury prevention is important and that having your best players play is important. And I think over time you'll see it get better. I think it will shift back again where you'll have more. But what's happened, some of these guys, the really good guys have gone to the NFL with a few exceptions here. Chris Doyles at Iowa does an amazing job. You know, there's some guys that are doing amazing jobs in college.
Sure.
General trend has been to get a young, loud guy who can yell and scream at kids.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think you'll see that trend away. I think people will start to go for a more mature coach who's been around a little bit and who understands and will realize that it's not the number of 400 benchers or the number of 500 squatters or the number of guys that clean 300. It's about can guys run and jump. Because ultimately what we've gotten screwed up on is that strength training is a means to an end, not a means unto itself. College football believes that strength training is a means unto itself. That college football strength training is to get players to lift more weight.
Right.
You can statistically say, I have more 400 benchers than you, so I should beat you.
Sure.
The reality of the situation is that if you have better players, you will probably beat that other team regardless of what you're doing in the weight room.
No doubt.
But if you can combine the two, if you can get really good strength and conditioning, and that's what I would say, if you look at Mike Wojcik or Johnny Parker or Al Miller, I wrote an article one time, and if you looked at the Super Bowls probably from 80 to 2000, Mike Wojcik, Rusty Jones, Al Miller and Johnny Parker were in more than half of them.
Yep.
And I can't think of that. I wrote it on strengthcoach.com, and I think it was called In Defense of the Strength and Conditioning Coach or something like that. But it was that four guys,
yep,
between them had something like 24 Super Bowl appearances, maybe more. Four guys.
Right.
And so it was called The Importance of the Strength and Conditioning Coach. And I said, these guys are really important. If you get the right guy, it can really help you win.
Right. Well, those guys.
Those guys, you know what I mean? So when you look at, and those guys, you know, again, Mike, you know, everybody had a different way of doing things, but they were all really good coaches.
Right, right.
And I've been able to spend time with everybody except Al Miller, and someday he's back in it, so I'm hoping I'll get a chance to go and spend a day with him. That's one of the things kind of on my bucket list, wish list.
He's great.
I spent a lot of time around Johnny Parker. I obviously spent a ton of time with Mike Wojcik. I spent a lot of time with Rusty, and I spent a lot of time with Al Vermeil. So I've been able to be around some of these guys and see.
Well, and the great thing about all four of those guys is they're humble, you know, they're lifelong learners, you know, and they'll tell you that it's a team approach. It's the coaches, it's the players, it's everybody contributing to that, not just them. And that's where I think we've gotten to this point where all of a sudden it's my program, that's the reason why we're winning. Well, anytime you get into that, when you're not winning, you know, you're out the door, or it's not about you, not in this field. I don't believe that.
No, it's about, it really is, I always tell everybody, in strength and conditioning, you are as good as who you work for.
I agree with that.
Or who you work with. Because if you work for somebody who does not allow you to do your job, it doesn't matter how good the players are.
That's right.
I've seen that because I went through, when I was in the NHL, I went through either five or six head coaches. At Boston University, I went through a bunch of head coaches in football. I went through a bunch of head coaches in basketball. And in hockey, we had one head coach the whole time I was there, a guy named Jack Parker, who happens to be, he is the winningest coach in one sport at one school in the history of the NCAA. He's won 900 games, and all of them are 899, I think, all of the year.
Something to be said for that, isn't there?
Yeah, and he let me do my job. He was real simple. Mike's in charge. You do what Mike says. If you don't do what Mike says, think about transferring.
Sure.
He would tell you tomorrow, I don't know a lot about strength and conditioning. The guys that kill you are the guys who think they know something. The guys who go to the clinic and listen to one of these pseudo-experts spout off. Because, again, you know, guys go to clinics, they lie.
Right.
Guys flat out lie. I mean, I can't tell you the number of instances I've seen of what I would consider outright fraudulent numbers, where I've had coaches come to me and say, well, this school has 35 guys that bench 400 pounds.
Yep.
I said, well, either that's a lie, or they have a really big drug problem at that school. I'd like to go watch testing. And then I watch testing, and you see the two-man bench press. You see spotters. You see bounces, arches. You see all kinds of crap.
Or you watch them at the combine where they're a 500-pound bench presser, but they're doing 225 five times.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
and you're a 500-pound bench presser. You better be able to hit 30 with no trouble at all.
I hear you.
And you shouldn't be bouncing or arching to do it.
Well, you know, one of the things that I've noticed about the NFL, I mean, I started in the NFL. It's been a while, and I'm back there now. And it's definitely, you're dealing with a more informed consumer. You know, these players, they're coming from different programs. A lot of them are coming from the Iowas and the different programs that have great strength coaches. And they have, you know, they have knowledge. They have access to information, you know. And with those, you know, with all that information that's out there right now, when you mention Mike Boyle, you know, you're polarizing. You love Mike Boyle or you hate Mike Boyle, it seems like, you know. And obviously that comes with being opinionated and all those things. One of the things that, you know, I've always, I early on in my career, I didn't get it. And it took me a while of reading the stuff that you put out. You know, what you do when you put out information and you change your opinion on things, it's because you've become a more educated consumer, in my mind. You've gone out and you've sought out the expert. And because you maybe changed something in your programming, you changed it because you researched it like crazy, and you've got somebody in that gave you some new information, you know. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about your learning process. You know, how do you decipher all of that information that's out there right now? And then how do you, you know, when you do make those program shifts, you know, what's the process in doing that for you?
I think it's sort of a multifaceted process. One, I've always studied rehab. I think that's my athletic training background. I've always looked at and said, okay, the best way to get somebody healthy is probably the best way to keep somebody healthy. That would seem pretty logical to me. So when you started looking at kind of the Gary Grays of the world and the Mike Clarks and some of these guys who were really making great progress in rehab, you started thinking, okay, there's got to be something to what they're doing. And we can't stay. Because I think what happens, and I've said this over and over again, we've been heavily influenced by people who are bilateral people, power lifters and Olympic lifters. And so as a result, anything that's not bilateral is wrong. Because anything that's not bilateral is wrong to them. But I look at it and think we deal with unilateral people. So we've got to filter what they tell us. We've got to be able to take it. And in the beginning, we didn't filter at all. We learned we all learned the same way. You're a little younger than me. You're probably 10 years younger than I am. But we all started off kind of reading muscle magazines, and then we started listening to power lifters. And as we got a little smarter, we realized power was important, so we started investigating the Olympic lifters. And we've all seen the curve of strength and conditioning go the same way, from kind of a bodybuilding approach to a powerlifting approach to an Olympic lifting approach, and now, in some places, to more of a sports performance approach.
Sure.
That's the logical progression that you should make. I always tell my coaches that. Everybody wants to be strong and not get sand kicked in their face. You know, that's where everybody who comes into our field starts with this idea, and it's all about how much you can bench and how much you can squat and the internet, you know, bullshit. I mean, that's natural. My problem, my process has been, one, I said, I started writing an article one time, when you train the same guy for 20 years, that changes how you look at things. As you look at his body change, as his ability to do things change, but the fact that he can keep playing, you start focusing on keeping him playing.
Right.
And you start to realize that, well, maybe kettlebell swings will be okay instead of cleans. And maybe I can do single leg squats instead of bilateral squats. Mainly in a lot of ways because guys didn't tolerate stuff anymore. Right. They had enough injuries. Because I can tell you, you know yourself in the NFL, when I start saying to guys, I'm not going to make you clean from the floor anymore. I'm not going to make you do heavy back squats. Man, guys high five you. They like pick you up and hug you thinking, oh, it's like getting out of jail. Like I got out of prison. You know, I'm out of the meathead world I was raised in, and someone now is going to treat me like an athlete.
Right.
And I don't have any problem with guys. It's funny. My athletes don't have any problem with the way I coach because they get better. They make money. Everything's good.
Yep.
The people who have a problem with me are almost always exclusively people who don't know me and have never spoken to me. You would find, and I think I could say this right across the board, the people who are my biggest critics have not had a five-second conversation with me.
Sure.
The people who are my biggest supporters probably grew up around me. You look at a guy like Chris Doyle. I coached Chris as a player. I knew Chris as a high school recruit. He was already lifting. He had a power rack in his basement coming out of high school. And he was already reading, he had already read articles I wrote in Powerlifting USA before he ever came to Boston University. I worked with him after he got hurt. I worked with him when he was a football coach who went into strength and conditioning. And I kind of talked him into and through that process.
Wow.
And there are so many of these guys that you think about. But part of it, a big part of it is people have no sense of history. They don't understand. I look at it and think what I know. Because you hate to say I've been there and done that, but I have been there and done it. I've been a competitive powerlifter.
Right.
I've been in a meet. I've done these things. I've hurt my back. I've gotten to the point where I couldn't do a squat anymore. I've had shoulder surgery. I've had the rotator cuff. I had an acromionectomy. I tell people, if you can imagine, acromionectomy now sounds like bloodletting.
Yeah.
But, they cut my deltoid off the bone. I had to be in a sling for 6 weeks to let my deltoid attach back because they didn't do subacromial decompression at that point. Wow. Shoulder arthroscopy from bench pressing. So I know what can go wrong.
Right.
I laugh at these people. Oh, don't worry about it. You got to lift heavy. Who cares? It's a little no pain, no gain. I'm like, trust me, guys. When you get to be 53, you'll realize that wasn't the best idea ever.
No doubt.
And I treat my athletes that way. So I think when you look at, that's the process. The process is experience. The process, I've gone and sat through two-day Kevin Wilkes seminars. Where I've sat through the whole shoulder and the whole knee, and I'm the only strength and conditioning coach there. Everybody else is a physical therapist but me.
Right.
I've sat through days of Gary Gray's chain reaction seminars. And I wouldn't do it now because I think he's gotten a little off the deep end, but in the early days he was really good.
Right.
I spent tons of time with Mike Clark. I spent time with Greg Cook. And I've integrated it still into strength and conditioning. We're not, people, like I said, people laugh when they come in and they see. Sometimes they're like, well, you guys are doing cleans. You guys are doing squats. I'm like, yeah, we lift weights, buddy. I keep posting pictures of really strong people.
That's me.
So people will realize. I get girls routinely cleaning 135 for 5 from the hang. Doing sets of 5 chin-ups with 25-pound weights strapped around their waist. Doing split squats with 32-kilo kettlebells in their hands. Girls, females.
Wow.
Not males. But people, they make these snap judgments based on, they see the death of squatting flip, which I didn't put up. That was a marketing piece. Pat Beats, brilliant guy. He sold a million DVDs because of it. But that wasn't my idea.
Sure.
He just said, this is the hook. This is what's really going to get people to buy these DVDs. And that thing's been viewed by a gazillion people who watched 5 seconds of it and then decided I was an idiot.
Yeah.
Never watched the rest. Never thought it through. I tell people, read the bilateral deficit research. I put it up all the time. Go read the research. Go look at our guys' split squat and realize that we had guys today split squatting 180 for 10, 90-pound dumbbells in each hand.
Yeah.
They can't do 360 for 10.
Right.
You know, so to me, it's the process of learning, trial and error, conversation, talking to guys like you. With this idea, our single leg work, I can remember talking to Jeff Oliver, who's at Holy Cross, who's another one of my GAs, and saying to me, do you think you'll ever get to the point where you just don't squat anymore? And I said, yeah, when I can figure out how to test unilateral strength in a way that I can get retest reliability, that's when I'll stop.
Yeah.
And so we started playing with split squat tests, and we got that retest reliability. We could look at it and say, yes, we can see if someone's getting stronger. That was all I ever needed to think, okay, I'm fine without doing this anymore.
Sure.
And so I guess the answer, long answer, and I always get too long-winded, but...
No, it's good.
The long answer is that it's a multifaceted process. You've got to be a good filter. You've got to know who's full of crap right off the bat. You've got to be able to look at somebody. You've got to listen to everybody. Martin Rooney said something really good at a seminar one time where he said, don't read only what you believe and don't believe only what you read. And it's really true. I mean, I've read Robert stuff. I've read Braun. Ken Leisner was a big influence on me early on. I would call myself a hit powerlifter.
Really?
I've been a very big, low-volume guy. I've never been influenced. You know, at some points, I kind of swung towards the Poliquin side of trying to do more volume. And we failed miserably.
Right.
And we went back to the Ken Leisner side of one balls-out heavy set with a lot of warm-ups. So, like, for me, when I squatted, if I was going to do 405 for 10, I did 135 for 5, I did 225 for 3, I did 315 for 1, and then I put 405 on and I went for it.
Boom. That's right.
As hard as I could go. And then I was done. I didn't worry about doing 395 for 10.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm done, see you later. And that's influenced a lot of what we've done. So when you think about all these guys during the course of your life, reading Powerlifting USA in the 70s and reading the Steel Tip, getting the Steel Tip newsletters from Ken, and strangely, Ken and Chris Doyle crossed paths.
Right.
Because Ken's wife is an Iowa alum. You could go and stay with Ken. And you realize, I always said, good people find each other. I found Johnny Parker.
Right.
I went to Patriots to see him. Can I come down? And he was a perfect gentleman. His assistant, when he went to San Francisco, was Dwayne Carlisle.
Yep.
Dwayne was one of my track athletes that I coached at BU. So, you know, when you talk about Dwayne's at Purdue now, but you talk about sort of how this family tree works.
Sure.
Dwayne went to BU for a year as a long jumper, triple jumper, did so well as a result of the weight room, left and went to Maryland as a full scholarship kid at Maryland. He was a walk-on at BU.
Wow.
The next year he's gone. And these are guys, you know, that are out making their own mark in the field as part of this kind of extended family, much like probably the one you're from, the guys that are from Nebraska. They're all there different guys, John Stuckey's guys. You know, you can almost find, you know, Al Vermeil's guys. You know, Al's tree has spread. I've hired some of Al's younger guys.
Yep.
And taking them sort of, you know, into our group, and then they've gone back out again. Josh Bonatol's at Purdue with Dwayne.
Yep.
Great kid. Worked for Eric at the Bulls after Al was gone. So it's a matter of, I guess, the point is filtering, knowing who the good information sources are. I latched on to Al's stuff early before I ever met Al, but then I made a point. I contacted Al. Come out and speak at my place. Spend a day.
Well, I think
sit in the house. You know what I mean? Like, these are all the things that I did to make myself better.
Right.
I just kept finding who the good people were and going to them. I went and met Mark Verstegen years ago. Became one of my best friends.
Well, I think what you're saying, you know, and it's exactly what I'm trying to do with these episodes, is you went out and you sought out industry leaders, originators of concepts, and you went straight to the source, and you valued the history of their experience, you know. And that's the thing about our field. Our field is so young as a profession still, that experience is still the key. There's still not a degree in strength and conditioning. There's, you know, all these different emphasis and things like that in these programs, but there's still not a degree, you know, and so experience still weighs out. And I tried to do that in my career where, You know, I didn't. You know, I was a head strength coach at 21 years old. I didn't want to make all the same mistakes that people had made. I didn't have the time to do it. You know, and so I sought out coaches left and right, still do, to try to avoid those landmines in this profession, so that I can, you know, I can navigate it as best and quickly as I can. You know, I think what you're saying is seeking out those originators of concepts and those innovators. That's the key, in my opinion.
And going right behind the curtain with them.
Yeah.
So I went to IPI to see Mark Verstegen and watch him coach.
Yeah, watch him train.
I watched him coach for a couple hours and said, this guy's the real deal. He's 30 years old. He's 10 years younger than me. He's legit.
Yeah.
Because I saw him there with his athletes. And that's why I laugh. You know, the internet now, it's like you've got these guys talking about all the people that they train. I'm like, where are the people?
Sure.
You got guys making videos talking about they train MMA fighters, and they've got some 50-year-old woman demoing the exercise. I'm like, if you train MMA fighters, you'd have some to demo the exercises. You wouldn't need some 50-year-old lady.
No doubt.
Yet people think these guys have created this persona. And my whole thing is, you know, and guys get mad at me because they say, oh, you're the big basher of the internet people. I'm like, yeah, I mean, I'm one of them.
Right.
But you can come to the gym and watch me coach. You can see my athletes. They're there. They exist. My gym exists. The people exist. And that's what I wanted to see. I didn't have to worry about if Al Vermeil existed. He just had to show me his 8 world championship rings. So I knew he really existed. I didn't have to go to Chicago. I was more than happy to have him come see me. But Johnny Parker, we went right in the room with Johnny with the Patriots players. We watched those guys work out. We talked to Johnny. I went down with Mark. I watched Mark work. My thing was I sought out what I thought were the best coaches, and then I went and watched those coaches coach.
Yeah, it's
Johnny Parker is one of the best influences on me because he was one of the most humble people I've ever seen. We got down there, and he's like, get on the platforms, coach some guys. So I can remember I was on the platform with Ted Johnson working through clean stuff with him, and I had a couple of the players at that time that had trained with me before, And then he walked up and said, what was Mike telling you about cleaning that I don't tell you?
Wow.
I thought, how freaking humble is this guy that not only is he not intimidated, he's not here thinking, oh, yeah, you guys stand over in the corner, don't touch anybody, don't clean anything. And I wouldn't recommend that for everybody. He let us coach.
Wow.
And then he asked the guys what we were telling him that was helping him more than what he said.
How about that?
Because Mark Verstegen, the first day I went, he said to me, you want to come to the staff meeting? I said, yeah, that'd be great. I'd love to sit in. What are we going to do? He said, ask you questions. I said, really? He goes, yeah, we just like to sit and ask, do you mind? We'll sit and ask you questions.
How about
I said, here's a guy who's not insecure. He's bringing me into his facility, sticking me in front of his staff. We didn't know each other from Adam. But who was his assistant then? Darrelletto, who's with the Houston Rockets.
Yep.
With him after that, you know, Luke Richardson, who's out in Denver. You know what I mean? Like, you know, the trees, there's only a couple of really good trees. And you just got to make sure. I always tell people, stay near those good trees, you'll be okay.
No doubt. And I think the other thing there is those guys, they did it because they never let their emphasis change from the athlete. They want their sole purpose is to make the athlete better. And if you can come in and give them a coaching cue that they can use with their athletes to make them better, they're going to grab that and they're going to take a hold of that and be appreciative, you know, of you and take full advantage. And I think that's the key.
I tell people that all the time. I come back from the center. My guys don't know who I talk to.
Right.
They only know that I'm helping them get better. I'm not worried about people like, oh, I'm worried about what my guys are going to think. I'm like, you guys are going to think you're trying to get better.
That's right.
And they'll think more of you.
No doubt.
Not less of you, but they're so worried. You know, what if I change something? I always tell people I'm changing something because it's better.
Yeah.
Yep. I always tell everybody, that's when someone says, you know the best way to work out? I'm like, yep, the way we did it today. Because if there was anything I thought we could do better than what we did today, we would have done it today. I would have changed it.
That's good. Well, man, I know you got to get going. There's a couple quick things I want to hit you with before you go. Is there a book that you recommend? Obviously, I'm going to link up all your books and all your stuff, but is there a book that you think that every strength coach should read? Maybe an app recommendation, something that maybe you're using with your athletes.
I'd say there's two things that everybody should read. How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Dan Carnegie.
Dale Carnegie, one of the most fundamental books. Everybody should read it regardless of what they do for a living.
Awesome book.
Stephen Covey, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. Same thing. Everybody who wants to be good at anything should start with those two books.
Yeah, they're great.
Talk about apps. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to look at my phone so I can think of the name of it. But, it's an interval timer.
Okay.
It's really, really good. And it is called Bleep Test, B-L-E-E-P. I really like Bleep Test. It's basically your beep test app, but you can put it on your phone. You can plug your iPhone right in. You get your beep test on your phone.
Oh.
Which is really, really cool. And then the other one is Workout Muse Pro. I love Workout Muse Pro because you can put your own music in. The old Workout Muse, you got kind of elevator music with it.
Yeah.
Workout Muse Pro, you can go in and select a playlist off your own phone.
Yeah, my wife has that.
You can have the timer, and we use it for stretching. We use it for all kinds of stuff.
That's great.
And we've got smaller groups because it's like having another coach because, you know, when we do circuits, I put the Workout Muse on, 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off, whatever we're doing. You can set anything you want. Those are two, I think, great ones that everybody should have.
Is there a quote that you live by or a quote that you got plastered in your gym that you think athletes should live by?
It doesn't take 1 ounce of talent to get in great shape. That's my favorite. Because in our business, one of the things you realize is that talent is inversely proportional to work habits.
Yeah.
And at those places, when you go to the most talented guy at Tennessee was probably the worst worker. And the hardest worker at Tennessee was probably the least talented guy. There will be people that screw that up.
Yeah, there's always outliers.
In general, that's the way it's going to be.
Yep.
So what I tell my guys all the time, when we've got conditioning tests, don't tell me you can't make the conditioning test because it doesn't take any talent to make the conditioning test.
It
might take some talent to bench 400 pounds. It might take some talent to clean 300 pounds. It might take some talent to have a 30-inch vertical jump in terms of having the pure neuromuscular ability. It doesn't take any talent to run the 300-yard shuttle run.
Yeah, it's a great point.
It takes
point.
A guy who's willing to grind.
No doubt. No doubt. Well, Mike, I'm going to make sure to link up everything. What do you got going on now or in the future here that people can catch up with you?
You know, I've always – strengthcoach.com is the big thing. And Body by Boyle Online. I always say strengthcoach.com is sort of the entry level. It's $15 a month, and it's a huge amount of information for $15. Body by Boyle Online is probably $39 a month, but it's literally all of our programming. We've got, I think on that site, we've got almost 200 hours of lectures. Dan John, Sue Falsoni, Charlie Weingraff, all these, every in-service that we've ever had done at our place, we videoed on there. We video every staff meeting that we do. We put every program up that we do. So those are the two biggest things I think that we're doing that people could kind of jump on easy. If people like if they want a cheap, no cost look, they can, you know, I have Strength Coach blog where it's all, you know, it's a lot of random stuff, but there's a lot of good stuff there. I'll link up. I'll link up. I've been doing a bunch of stuff for staff from the staff magazine. I link that stuff up there. I'm just throwing stuff up every week.
Yeah.
Keep people kind of abreast of what's going on. But those would probably be the big three. And then there's obviously Perform Better as a product. We've got Functional Strength Coach 1 through 4 and books and DVDs. And there's really too much stuff out there to mention. I think if somebody looked through the Perform Better site, they'd find something. You know, that evolution of a strength coach talk that I did, which is based on 25 mistakes, a success secrets one that I did 2 years ago that I think is really good.
Right.
Just from a straight coaching standpoint, and there's ACL prevention, there's plyos, there's foam rolling. We've put a lot of stuff up over the last, I guess, 10 years.
Well, that's what, you know, that's the thing that I've always respected the most about you, Mike, is that you're a guy that you're transparent. You're going to tell people what you think. It's going to be backed up with 100% research and practical experience, and you're going to share it. And not a lot of coaches will do that. Not a lot of coaches will put themselves out there. So I know that for me, every time I've contacted you, you've gotten right back to me and you've given me great advice throughout my coaching career. And I know you do the same because I see you all over the place, you know, writing and sharing on social media and things like that. So I just want to thank you for all that you do for our field and appreciate you being on the show, man.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for having me. Like I said, I could do this all day.
All right, buddy. We'll talk to you later, man.
All right. Thanks.
Okay, guys, before we let you go, I want to make sure that you know that all the links that we mentioned in the episode are down below in the show notes. Make sure you check that out if you're listening to it on YouTube or in the car or something along those lines and you don't have access. Make sure you go to ronmckeefrey.com Click on the Iron Game Chalk Talk episodes, find Mike Will, and on all the show notes, we'll have all the links that we mentioned. So check it out there. In that is strengthcoach.com. Highly recommend strengthcoach.com. Been a member of it for quite some time. Great, great content. On it quite a bit. Well worth the money. Very cheap, but over-delivers on content. So I can't recommend that enough. Make sure you go to strengthcoach.com. Click the link below and sign up for that. Also want you to go to my Facebook page, just Ron McKeefry on Facebook, and leave me some comments as to what you liked most about this episode or what you'd like to see in future episodes. Love hearing from you guys. Want to make this the best show possible for everybody involved. So I highly encourage you to go to the Facebook page and let me know your comments. So have a great week. We'll see you next week with a new episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Take care.